Okay, thank God we just finished Yom Kippur, and it's our, of course, prayers and God willing plea to God that He hopefully heard all our prayers before Him on the wonderful day yesterday. And indeed, right after Yom Kippur, there's no happier days to the Jewish people. You go from the vast worry of the judgment before Yom Kippur, adding so many prayers every day, adding prayers and indeed making the prayer service very long, to the days after Yom Kippur, right before Sukkot, in which the prayer service is in fact substantially shorter, as we omit the Tachanun prayer, which talks about repenting from sins and arouses a certain feeling of sadness for two reasons. First of all, God willing, we repented enough yesterday, but there's never a day in which, God forbid, there isn't an ability, at least an opportunity, to repent, so we can repent every day. But the sadness is something we want to omit. And the reason for that is that this period of time is the happiest for the Jewish people. The entire Jewish nation yesterday, the whole entire day, were like angels. They fasted, they prayed, and there's nothing more angelic than that. And indeed, we have a lot to be proud of. The last law regarding Yom Kippur is very interesting. The law is that on the night after Yom Kippur, after you have, of course, recovered from the fast, you should begin to build your sukkah. And indeed, I always wondered about this because, in general, after the fast, the last thing you want to do is build a sukkah. You just ate, you want a lot of caffeine that you didn't have all day, and you want to go to sleep. And indeed, the first thing you should do is build a sukkah. So last night, after we came home from the break fast, that's what we did. We brought up the boys of the sukkah. And I always wondered why it's so important right away, right after Yom Kippur, to build a sukkah. Could wait till the next day. This year was wonderful. Sukkot was Yom Kippur was on Shabbos. So Sunday, it's a day off, it's a great day to build a sukkah. But the Jewish law wants you to do it that night. In my opinion, there's two aspects to sukkahs. The first aspect of sukkahs is living in the sukkah. That's an aspect of sukkahs that, of course, we can deal with later. That is to dwell in a sukkah for 7 days. But there's a totally separate aspect to sukkahs. And that is to expand Yom Kippur to our regular day life. To expand the experience of Yom Kippur to every single day. It was not such a big deal yesterday for us to fast because all Jews were fasting, to pray because all Jews were fasting. It's a big deal tonight, however, the day after Yom Kippur, to come to a minyan. That indeed is extraordinary. It's a big deal tonight to indeed start taking the spirituality of Yom Kippur and to bring it into our meals, to bring it into our homes. And it's not very easy to do. And therefore, the first thing you should do right after Yom Kippur, what's your first priority? First of all, eat and break the fast. And now, the first thing you should do is build a sukkah. Go to a mitzvah. Go to something substantial. Don't go see the movies you missed and you taped during the holiday. Don't go and read a book. Go and do something substantial. Build a sukkah. It has nothing to do with sukkahs coming. Sukkahs is now 4 days away. And God willing, there's plenty of time to build a sukkah in 4 days. It has to do with the first thing you do, and the first impression will count. If the first thing you do right after Yom Kippur is to build a sukkah, then obviously that indeed will start a trend of various acts and deeds you'll do, and each one will be substantial. You're taking from everything you talked about in Yom Kippur, and you're bringing it into your life. The first thing you do is build a sukkah. And then when you eat, you'll eat in the proper fashion. And then when you go to work, you'll be a better person than you were before Yom Kippur. Indeed, the challenge of these days is to take the spirituality of Yom Kippur and to bring it in to our daily lives. And that, in essence, is why these days are the happiest days of the Jewish calendar. Because the entire Jewish nation, in one way or another, was influenced by Yom Kippur. And the entire Jewish nation today goes back to work and goes back to the normal life in a different way. Something changed in them yesterday. And there's no question that when the entire Jewish nation is dealing with improving their own life, not just improving their spirituality, but taking their spirituality to their common day-to-day life, indeed it's nothing happier than that, and that's the reason why during these days we indeed omit Tachanun, we indeed omit those sad prayers from the prayer service, simply because these days are filled with happiness. The proof of what I'm saying now is very interesting. The Rama, who wrote the glosses on the Jewish law, he writes at the end of the laws of Yom Kippur, it's very important to build a sukkah, because you should go from one mitzvah to another. Right after Yom Kippur, the first thing you should do is build a sukkah. It's to go from the mitzvah of Yom Kippur to the mitzvah of building a sukkah. Then begins the laws of sukkahs. The next page begins the laws of sukkahs. And there too he writes, and it's important to build a sukkah right after Yom Kippur. Why does he write it twice? So you can say he's not God. God doesn't repeat things, but a human being is repetitive. So he wrote things twice. However, let's remember that every human being is worried about one thing. And what's that one thing? Wasting money. How much did print cost once upon a time? Pretty substantial. They didn't just throw away paper like we do today. If he wrote this glosses on the Jewish law, I can promise you he read it and reread it and reread it a few more times, taking out everything that wasn't needed in order to save money on paper. So why did he write it twice? Because there's two aspects. The first aspect is to build a sukkah in time for sukkahs. It's only 5 days away. The second aspect is, take Yom Kippur and bring it to your life. And that's why he wrote it twice. One aspect is very functional. Just build a sukkah because you need it. The next aspect is not functional. It's more spiritual. He's telling you, build a sukkah the first thing right after Yom Kippur in order to enlarge Yom Kippur to every day of your life. Every day of your life you eat with spirituality. Every day of your life you take shower, do it with spirituality. Every day of your life you wear leather shoes, do it with spirituality. And that's why these are the happiest days to the Jewish people. Indeed, we're a very fortunate people that indeed we have the ability to take the synagogue into our own homes. We began saying that these days are the happiest days for the Jewish people because we are not only sure, but we're almost positive that since the entire Jewish nation fasted on Yom Kippur, we're like angels before God, God willing forgave us. And the second reason why these days are so happy is because we're actually, the entire Jewish nation is preparing for the holiday of Sukkot. And the holiday of Sukkot is not a holiday that you can just go by without preparing for. You don't just have to make food for it, but rather, you have to build a physical sukkah, you have to buy a physical lulav and etrog, and indeed, there's so many mitzvot that you're involved with, that indeed, these days are very happy days. It would be a very good time now to clarify a little bit about the sukkah, and what makes a sukkah, not a hut. In general, we're used to huts, we're used to sheds, we're used to homes. The difference between a home and a sukkah is not its walls, it's not its decorations, and it's not even what we call it. The difference is one thing, and that's what differentiates a sukkah from a house and a hut. And what is that? The schach. The schach, which is the roof covering of the sukkah, makes the sukkah. So if you have a sukkah that's wall say on its sukkah, and it says in the sukkah you shall dwell for 7 days, and it was bought in some Jewish bookstore from Montreal, it doesn't make it into a sukkah. The sukkah is defined by its roof covering. When you have a roof covering that's kosher, then it's a sukkah. When you have a roof covering that's not kosher for a sukkah, then it's not a sukkah. It's a hut, it's a house, or anything else you would like to call it. The roof covering of the sukkah has to be, on the one hand, an organic material that grows from the ground. On the other hand, when you put it on your sukkah, it has to be disconnected from the ground. That means you can use trees, branches of a tree, as long as you cut them from the ground. But if the tree is hanging over your sukkah and covering it beautifully, and yet the tree is still connected to the ground, you can't use it. Very interesting. I never knew the real reason why that is. The only thing I can think of is that God wants us to make a sukkah. He doesn't want it to be made or to be natural. Rather, he wants us to make it, to have something to do with it. So therefore, you have to cut it from the ground in order to use it. And that's what you have to do. So if you happen to have a sukkah, a hut, that the tree is hanging over it and covering it nicely, you just cut it down, and then you have a kosher sukkah.
But with this only partly, I have a sukkah with a tree partly covering.
Okay. The sukkah has to be a roof covering on its totality that's disconnected from the ground. However, if you happen to have a part of it that's covered by a tree, or covered by a house, for example, you made a sukkah on your deck. Part of your deck is covered with a roof from the house, and part of it is not. You should sit under the area that's not covered by the house, but rather covered by the true schach, and not sit under the area that's covered by the tree. The fact that it's covered by the tree doesn't make the whole sukkah not kosher, but rather, this area that's covered properly is indeed kosher. So that's what you should do in that situation. In many houses in Israel, for example, where they're sensitive to building homes where you can build a sukkah, and yet it's not such a big home, so they did porches, and the porch is basically covered by the porch upstairs. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they leave a little indent at the end that's open to the sky. And that indent is where they put a little schach, meaning the covering of the sukkah, and they happen to have the amount of walls you need, and that's where they sit under. And for example, if you invite a lot of people over, the trick is very simple. Women are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Meaning if they decide they want to eat at home for the whole 7 days of the holiday, they have a right to, and no one can tell them off. However, if they decide to eat in the sukkah, obviously they have merit, and they're fulfilling the mitzvah just like you. But they're not obligated. So there's a trick in that situation. If you want to invite a lot of people over, then have the women sit under the non-kosher area, and you sit under the kosher area. Not in any way degrading it. It's just a practical advice, and it's done. And make more space. The walls of the sukkah can be made from any material whatsoever.
Before you get to the walls, I think you have a piece of scotch in your
corner. I do.
On the right hand, right hand.
Because,
right hand. Right
hand. I should stay there. Anyway. Indeed, one of the laws of the schach, because the schach makes the sukkah, don't worry about it. Because the schach makes the sukkah, if I start flying where it is, and waste another 10 minutes. I'll look in the mirror afterwards. If we make a sukkah, the sukkah walls, as I said, are irrelevant, but relevant, because you can't have a sukkah without walls. You have to have at least 2 full walls, meaning walls that are walls, and the third one can be just 36 inches or 37 inches, and that could be a kosher sukkah. You don't need 4 full walls. You can have 2.5, and that's enough. And that's covered by schach, and you have a kosher sukkah as long as you can sit in there. If it's still tiny, you can't get in there, it's not good. You have to have at least the ability to sit in there. So anyway...
How many people?
What? You, one person.
To sit in.
One. Now, why do I have schach in my hair? The reason is that because the walls, from my perspective, can be put up by anyone. It can be handmade, it can be man-made, it can be God-made, I don't care. For example, if God made a big hole in the ground right outside the synagogue, if we covered that hole with schach, we'd have a kosher sukkah. But the schach has to be put on by someone that's obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. And therefore, it has to be put on by a Jew. So therefore, there's a sukkah downstairs that wasn't made by me. It was made by non-Jewish people, and the schach was put on by me. So that's why the schach on my hair. Okay, that's where I came from. And that indeed, basically, the reason is that we want to put down the schach for the intent of the mitzvah of sukkah. We're not putting down schach to make a home. We're not putting down schach in order to make it nice. We're putting it because God commanded us to sit in the sukkah for 7 days and to enjoy it. And therefore, it has to be put down by a hand of someone that's obligated for the intent of God willing fulfilling the commandment of sitting in the sukkah. Yeah?
My understanding is that it still has to be pleasurable. If, for instance, it was pouring rain.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Now, we didn't get to the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah. We just got to talk about building of the sukkah. So now we're assuming we have a beautiful sukkah. And by the way, a sukkah is a home. It's not a shul. People think a sukkah is like a shul. No, a sukkah is like a home. This has many ramifications. For example, Moshe Dayan. Everyone remember who Moshe Dayan was? The one-eyed Moshe Dayan? You guys know who Moshe Dayan was? You saw him, but you served under him. Everyone know who Moshe Dayan was. Okay, Moshe Dayan, big general, chief of staff of the Israeli army, later the minister of defense. Great man. He comes to the sukkah right near my yeshiva one year. This is 30 years ago. And he asks the rabbi of my yeshiva to come sit next to him on the dais. So he comes to sit next to him on the dais, and he says, Rabbi, is a sukkah like a shul, like a home? So my teacher, the head of the yeshiva, says, it's like a home. It's not like a shul. Oh, that's a good idea. And he takes off his kippah. Indeed, a sukkah is like a home. And you act in the you have to do in the sukkah what you do at home. What you sometimes do at home and sometimes you do outside your home, you can do outside the sukkah. But what you 9 times out of 10 do at home, you have to do in the sukkah. You 9 times out of 10 eat your dinner at home, you eat it in the sukkah. 9 times out of 10 you sleep at home, you have to sleep in the sukkah. However, Victor comes and says, I understand that if you're not pleasurable in the sukkah, then you don't have to be there. And he's absolutely correct. Because you see, the sukkah is what God told us to build. See, we can't answer. God said build the sukkah outside, under the sky, and live with it. Now, when we build a home, we put in a heater if we're too cold in the winter, and we put in an air conditioner if we're too hot in the summer. It's not exactly practical to do in the sukkah, unless you happen to do something, but it's not practical. God says, no problem. The same way I'm obligating you to sit in the sukkah and to dwell there, if you're uncomfortable in the sukkah, you're exempt from sitting there. What does that mean? It means one thing in Israel, it means something opposite in Halifax. While I lived in Israel, this meant it was too hot to sit there. It was too hot, the bees are swarming all over you, you're sweating hot, you want to go inside your air-conditioned home. It's too hot, you can't enjoy sitting there. Maybe at night you can enjoy it, but during the day, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you can't enjoy it, you go inside the house, don't even think twice. In Halifax, quite the contrary. The problem is not the heat. The problem, of course, is, can we bring a portable heater into the sukkah because it's so cold? If it's too cold in the sukkah to sit, namely you just are not comfortable there, you're sitting there and you're too cold, you have every right to go inside and to eat your meals inside, to sleep inside, do everything you want inside. If you can manage in the sukkah, then you should do it in the sukkah. So I don't agree with many rabbis that write out in their pamphlets for the holiday, outside or in North America, it's too cold to sleep in the sukkah. I don't agree with that. What do you mean it's too cold? It's too cold. If you happen to be too cold, then don't. But you can't write it's too cold. It's like an objective thing. It is too cold. What do you mean it's too cold? I'm going outside tonight. I'm not wearing a jacket. I'm not wearing anything. And I'm not too cold. Right? It depends when. For example, next year sukkah is going to come out at the end of October. Maybe it'll be colder than this year. This year we're still in September. We're first day of fall, the 21st. Oh, so that's it. We're in the fall now. So what a big deal. We're on the border of fall and summer. So if you're too cold in the sukkah, you have every right to go home inside. You go out in the sukkah, you start eating there, and you're just shivering. And you put in a winter coat, and it's not enough. Then you have every right to go in inside. Exception to the rule is rain. When it rains in your sukkah, if you're comfortable in the rain, you love the rain, you love getting drenched, you still can't sit in the sukkah. And it rains in the sukkah, it's like God telling you the following. It's like God telling you, I don't want you to sit there. Why? God told us to sit outside, right? God knows it's sukkahs, right? So if God's making the rain on us, God's basically telling us, I don't want you to sit there, get inside. So when it's cold or when it's hot, it's up to you. Some people are cold, some people are hot. For example, I don't know if everyone has this fight at home, but in most homes, the man is always hot and the woman's always cold. So let's say you're in the sofa, your wife's too cold, she goes inside. You're not too cold, you stay outside, okay.
Has to go home.
It's subjective. What?
Oh, you have to sit here Yom Kippur. The women were all cold.
It's hilarious. It's exactly what happened at Yom Kippur. Now, on the other hand, rain is not subjective, it's objective. You don't sit there in the rain. The exception to the rule is the first night of Sukkot and the second night of Sukkot, in which there's a biblical commandment to actually eat there, but we'll talk about that tomorrow night. But in general, throughout the holiday, you're not comfortable in the sukkah because there's too many bees. It's too hot. It's too cold. I don't know what it is. You just can't sit there. You have every right to go home, and that's what the Jewish law says. Any questions on this before we dive in, Myers? Yes?
Guests in the sukkah. Any rule against non-Jewish guests in the sukkah?
Absolutely no rule against it. As a matter of fact, you come to shul on the first day of Sukkot, read the Haftorah carefully, and you'll see why it's even something you can encourage. But I'll say no more. Come to shul the first day. Yeah.
If you're spending most of your time in the sukkah, can you extend an extension cord from the house to put a television in the sukkah?
Definitely. In fact, if you do that, I'm coming to your sukkah to watch. Because in Israel, I did that. But in Halifax, I'm a little bit of a chicken because I'm afraid it's going to rain and ruin the TV. Mm-hmm. The TV is heavy and it's downstairs. In Israel, I wheeled it right out from my bedroom into the sukkah, and that's where it was. And I enjoyed watching TV in the sukkah. During Kol HaMoed. The cantor that was here, though, his family had a custom every sukkah. If one night of Kol HaMoed, they had a big sukkah. They invite everyone over. We rent a movie. Popcorn was there. It would be wonderful. Definitely. If you watch TV at home, watch it in the sukkah. Now, you can't do it because the TV's too heavy, the cable TV doesn't get there, then obviously you're uncomfortable in the sukkah, watch at home. Because you just can't watch there. But in general, that's where you should watch TV. Definitely. Yeah.
Decorate the sukkah. There's some Jewish people that say you don't decorate it.
There's no some Jewish people that say it. There's one Jewish people that says it. There's only the Chabad, Hasidim do not decorate their sukkah. For the reasons why, please ask them. I am not at liberty to say because I just don't know. In the Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law, and every other source I know, it says decorate the sukkah because it's like a home. You're supposed to decorate it and make it beautiful. When you have four walls, it's ugly. You want to show something beautiful, you make it. The talis we use here. The talis is a four-cornered garment with tzitzit. So you can take a four-cornered blanket that's disgusting and a rag and put four tzitzit on it and you've got a good kosher talis. But you have to make it beautiful. So what do? You put some nice lines on it. You put a header to it. You make it look a little nicer, right? Or you buy a nice towel like Victor has. It's a nice towel. It's colorful. You make a mitzvah nice. You don't make it disgusting. A shul, you just have to have an aron on it and a bima and this and that. But we don't want to make a shul like that because it's ugly. So we make a nice shul, a place that you come in and say, this is beautiful. That's what the law is. It says in the Torah, Vei Eli Ve'amdeinu, which means, I am God. Come before me and make the mitzvah beautiful. Make a nice sukkah, take a nice lulav, take a nice talis, take a nice pair of tzitzis. And that's what the law is, and that's what we decorate our sukkah. That's what I've been spending most of my time doing the last 2 days. Well, ask them. I don't know. I don't know.
And they will sit in the rain.
And they sit in the rain, and they don't sleep there ever. Okay? Again, I'm not a Chabad Chassid. We have a Chabad Chassid in town. You're definitely welcome to ask him. We ended off by saying that the first night of Sukkot and the second night here in the diaspora, because of the historic doubt, are very unique in the sense that throughout Sukkot, if we want to eat a meal, we have to eat in the Sukkah. But if we decide to survive on potato chips and chocolate, we don't have to eat in the Sukkah, and therefore we don't have to eat in the Sukkah at all. If you want to take a nap, you're supposed to do it in the Sukkah. If you decide you have to take a nap, you don't have to do it in the Sukkah. Namely, to make a long story short, you don't have to obligate yourself to be hungry or to be sleepy on Sukkot. If it happens, then do it in the Sukkah. But there's no obligation throughout the holiday to eat physically in the Sukkah. There's no obligation for a meal. That's on the surface. Having said that, if it is a holiday, then we're obligated to eating two meals. If it's Shabbos, three meals. But beyond that, during the days of Chol HaMoed, let's say this year from Sunday to Wednesday, if we are not tired and we're not hungry, we don't have to eat in the Sukkah. Snacks and things that we usually don't necessarily eat in the home can be eaten outside the Sukkah. And to make a long story short, if you're not eating a real meal, or you're not eating bread, or you're not eating some sort of a cake, or a cookie, or noodles, or pretzels, or things like that, you can eat it outside the Sukkah. The first two nights, however, are very unique. And the first two nights, we have an obligation to eat. And it's all about food. In fact, the whole holiday is about food. We have an obligation to eat a certain amount of bread in the Sukkah, even if it rains. Now, I'm very happy it's raining tonight. I want it to rain drastically all night. I want the skies to let it out. And God willing, tomorrow it should be nice and clear and beautiful. Because I don't want to go into the Sukkah when it's raining tomorrow night. What it basically would mean, is you go in there, you make Kiddush, you say a motzi, you eat a piece of challah, and you go right back into the house. That's not pleasant, but it's a biblical commandment on the first and second night to eat there, even if it rains. And that's indeed extraordinary, because throughout the holiday, we learned last night, if it rains, not only you shouldn't be in there, not only are you allowed to go home, you shouldn't be there at all. And indeed, the holiday is all about food. Everything about the holiday is food. And we'll get into it in a moment, but it's even manifests itself in the lulav and the etrog we shake every day. But we have a question.
So if you go to work 9 to 5 and every day you have lunch, you always eat lunch, should you go home to your sukkah to eat lunch?
The question is, what's on the menu?
Well, let's say every day you make a sandwich.
Sandwich has to be eaten in the sukkah, and indeed you're not allowed to eat a sandwich outside the sukkah. So if a person goes to the office during sukkahs and he can't physically go home for lunch, my suggestion would be to change his menu a little bit. For example, if he took a deli without the sandwich, namely just deli, that doesn't have to be eaten in the sukkah. Only things that are made out of flour have to be eaten in the sukkah. So that's why I said cakes, cookies, and all that. But if it's not made out of flour, if it's all the proteins and things like that, or for example, if a person wants to eat a salad, that doesn't have to be eaten in the sukkah. When you're at home, however, it's a good idea to eat everything in the sukkah because it's accessible and there's a mitzvah, even if you want to take a drink of water. But obviously you're not obligated in that.
If you have bread then tomorrow night, that means you have to make kiddush. So you have to have kiddush before you have
As
bread.
I said, you make kiddush in the sukkah, and you have a piece of bread. No, I said kiddush. I said kiddush. I have another quote. I can check later. I have kiddush and the bread, and that's it. Now, as I said, the weather forecast for tomorrow night is going to be clear and beautiful, and the first few days of Sukkot, everything's going to be great. It's just going to be cloudy on Sunday, even say rain. I hope that www.theweathernetwork.com is correct, and that's the way it's going to be. So let it out tonight, and we'll be fine. Now, I say it's all about food. Yeah. God willing. It's all about food. The whole holiday is about food, because on this particular holiday, we judge by God for the amount of rain this year. Now, rain, as we see in Nova Scotia, is not a problem, but the Jewish nation obviously is praying for the welfare of the state of Israel and the land of Israel, and there, of course, rain doesn't necessarily come like this. For example, I just talked to my sister-in-law today, and we were on the webcam, she shows me the sukkah, and she shows the fan in the sukkah. I say, what's the weather? Tomorrow's going to be 36 degrees. So, rain doesn't necessarily come so easily in Israel, and that's why this whole holiday, God is going to judge us for rain. Now, rain is very important for one reason. It's the source of life. Without rain, without water, we can't make anything. We can't wash our hands before we begin to prepare food. We can't do a thing. And that's basically why the whole holiday is about food, and that's the reason why we shake the lulav and etrog every day. The lulav and the etrog, and the hadassim, the haragot, all the four species, all need rain in some way or another. The willow branch needs constant rain, therefore the willow tree only grows by a brook. But other species, they need rain in certain extents, and that's why we shake them every day. And we say, God, please give us rain, God willing, for the coming year. And indeed, on the first night of Sukkot, we're obligated to eat in the Sukkah. God is trying to tell you a very important message. What that message is exactly, we'll deal with tomorrow night. But in general, it's all about food, and we shouldn't be scared to eat after Yom Kippur. As a matter of fact, God is basically telling us, not only is food not terrible, it's something good. Don't give your life for it, as we said on Yom Kippur, but it's something that if you use it properly, you can make each meal into a religious experience. And that's why it's all about food in the holiday. How much rain we're going to have, and therefore we shake the lulav. And, of course, the whole holiday, many of the prayers have to do with rain. Finally, if you add up all the various, we call them the four species, but necessarily it's not true. How many species do we really have? Seven. One lulav, one etrog, three adasim, two aravot. Seven. Seven is a very important number in Judaism. I like to say the number seven is symbolic of something being complete. The world was completed in 7 days, and there are seven species, there's seven Shemitah years. Seven is a very big number in Judaism, and there's no question, we go around the Bima seven times on the holiday. Seven is very important. There's one more thing that starts with seven, and that, of course, is the seven species that God blessed the land of Israel with. If it's the barley and the wheat and the pomegranates and the dates and the olives and I forgot what else, those and the figs, what did I miss? Whatever. And they're supposed to be eaten in a certain order if you eat them together.
Jaffa oranges.
They have to be eaten in a certain order if they're eaten together. And there's no question that the seven species and the seven species of the lulav are obviously very, very similar. It's not just a coincidence. God's basically telling you, shake it, pray for food, because I'm going to judge you for how much rain you're going to have this year. Don't be scared of enjoying this world. Enjoy this world in the proper fashion. God willing, enjoy this world in the proper fashion will be the slogan that we'll continue with throughout the holiday, God willing. And we wish everyone a good yontif and a chag sameach, and may indeed we be judged favorably and have a lot of rain this year and great meals.